A special note for listeners for this episode, there is some discussion about suicide and addiction. If you choose to continue listening, please be sure to take care of yourself first. Thank you.
This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, listeners, to Postcards on the Line. I'm your host, Chris Littlefield, and with me this week is Dan Gunther. Dan, it's so great to have you on this week. Thanks for coming on.
It's great to be on. I always love guesting on Postcards and stuff like that. It's nice to kind of spread out and do some different things with the network.
Yeah, it's really an honor to have you here, and you already do a lot of different things with this network and in other places, such as Literary Treks, Take a Drink.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is not your first time on Postcards?
No, it has been quite a while, though. I've been on with Amy a couple times in the past. Postcards on the Edge for Discovery. But I think this is my first time for Postcards on the Line. So I'm excited for that.
Nice. Well, you really don't need an introduction because I think most of our listeners know who you are.
I don't know. I'd like to think so.
You're a famous podcaster. Come on.
Oh, no, I don't know about that. But thank you. I appreciate
well,
that.
Well, you will be after this episode.
Exactly.
Well, today we're discussing the fan response to Broken Pieces. If you would like to participate and share your response, please post your comments in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Type B-A-B-E-L into the search field and it will come right up. We'll create a special Postcards discussion thread right before each new episode. Leave your comments and they just might get read on the air. As of this recording, we have 234 comments on the Postcards thread, which is a 45% decrease from our last episode. Listeners, keep those comments coming because we love your feedback. Comments may be edited for time. Dan, let's go ahead and get started with our listener comments. Would you do the honors, please?
Yeah, I'd love to. So we'll start with Tim Hands. He says, best episode of the series so far, had more of a Star Trek-y feel to it. Whenever Seven / Annika Hansen appears, the series happens to reach its peak and find its footing. And Christy Keene also says, I loved this episode. Absolutely brilliant. Theories were proven. Others were disproved. Characters were developed. And a mystery arises. I like that. It feels that echoes my sentiments. There's so much going on here. We're getting answers and things are moving forward into what I'm assuming is going to be the big two-part end game we've got coming up.
And I like, Tim, the Star Trek-y feel that you said. And I also think that when Seven appears, we get kind of this peak feeling and that it really feels like we have our footing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her "we are Borg" line just echoes and reverberates in this episode. She's so good.
She's so great. Rhea Papagiorgio says, Hugh would make an awesome Borg queen. I think there's some great cosplay potential there. And Patrick Carlin says, a deep cut I missed, Picard and Admiral Nakamura talking about their times on the Reliant. Yeah, Hugh as a Borg queen, brilliant, Rhea. I love it.
Yeah, me too.
I also missed that deep cut. Did you hear that, Dan?
Yeah, so Picard is talking with Rios about he's an ensign on the Reliant and his feelings in that position. There's a deleted scene from The Measure of a Man, and it's included on the Blu-ray. There's a special extended cut of The Measure of a Man where Picard and Nakamura are talking about his time on the Reliant with Nakamura as his commanding officer, so... it was a really cool, or I don't know, it's been a while. Nakamura may have been just a fellow lieutenant or something, but yeah, it's a really nice reference.
Okay. Yeah. I think that the most common term in all of these threads for Picard is deep cut.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing it so many times.
That's true. Yeah. Control F, deep cut. There's a lot of hits. All right. Well, Rob Vaughn on Twitter says, I've been wondering if this starts the gradual fall of the Federation, which culminates with the events we will see in season 3 of Discovery. C. Brian Jones responds, that's possible. Clearly, Starfleet has started down a different path than the one it was on through the end of Voyager. So I've seen this speculation in some places because we know, you know, 1,000 years in the future or you know, 800, 900 years in the future, it looks like the Federation's in pretty rough shape. Could this be the start of that? My opinion is not really, I don't think, because that's such a huge long time frame, but it is interesting speculation. And at the very least, it seems that both shows will be kind of playing with those similar themes, which will be very interesting.
Yeah, and that's been brought up also, that we're dealing with similar AI type of situations with Control and Disco, and then of course what's going on now in Picard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of parallels there for sure.
Patrick Carlin says, I loved Picard's moment when he sits in the chair looking like he's gonna have a big hero moment, and then I don't actually know how this thing works. And Nicholas Paul Collinson says, OMG, it was like showing my dad how to work his new iPad. I had to tell my mom how to send pictures through Messenger with her iPad the other day. So I totally get that.
Yeah. No, I think that's a common feeling among the younger generation or the middle generation kind of thing. There's a lot of times when I'm at my parents' place and I have to walk my dad through something on the computer or something like that. So yeah, that was a great little humanizing moment. I loved that they just completely deflate this like music swelling heroic moment, and he's got that little kind of embarrassed half smile on his face. I just love that. Ian Bartholomew says, got to love any episode that includes a Scottish guy called Ian. Can't raise the bar higher than that. And Suman Dawan says, I love that the music of Billie Holiday is still known in the future. So Ian, yes, I mean, obviously that raises the bar of any show. So we're happy to raise the bar of this show with that comment. So thank you. And yeah, Billie Holiday, good stuff. I love more contemporary-ish music when it shows up in Star Trek. So that was a lot of fun for sure.
Oh yeah, that was really great. I think Ian also was mentioning that they didn't spell Ian correctly in the subtitles, that they spelled it I-A-N, and I think he wanted the more traditional Gaelic spelling. I don't know.
Oh yeah.
Our friend Aaron Harvey says, love that the Medusans got a shout out and that Raffi mistook a record player for a Walkman. I think that may be the first ever product name referenced outside the Kelvin universe. And Joshua DeVries says, I wonder if the Borg were able to inject Narissa with nanoprobes before she beamed out. Would be fun to see a Borgified Narissa show up in the finale, but only if Seven gets to blow her up. Dan, is that the first product name that we've gotten outside of the Kelvin universe?
I want to say no, but I think there might be technicalities on that answer. Like there's a taxi cab in Star Trek 4 that has Junior Mint's ad on the side or something like that. So there's probably lots in like Star Trek 4 and stuff like that.
This might be the most overt.
I think so. I'm trying to think of others.
We've got the T.
Yes, that's true. Tea. Yeah, we had Twinnings T, right? We saw. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is definitely, I think, maybe the only time that we've heard a character perhaps reference it.
That could be. Yeah, I did love that reference. I thought that was like, you know, random name for old timey music playing thing. I think that's a Walkman or something like that. That was great.
Yeah, that was really good. It's kind of like when in Star Trek Beyond, when they play the music and they say that that's classical music.
Right.
It's really, I can't remember what it is.
Oh, was it Sabotage by the Beastie Boys, I think was the song?
Oh, maybe that's it.
Yeah, I love that because these people are a few centuries removed from us. Like, they're not going to have that same perspective, that same context that we have. So it's kind of funny. I like when they make an effort to kind of illustrate that distance and that misunderstanding kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, we do that kind of thing all the time, I'm sure.
Absolutely. No, there's kind of like old history. People always conflate like things that happened like hundreds or even thousands of years apart.
Right. And Joshua, I'd love to see a Borgified Nerissa show up. That scene where all of the Borg came around her before she beamed out, it reminded me of The Walking Dead when all of the walkers just go toward a living person and just tear them apart.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was going to happen at first, but we don't quite get that satisfaction of seeing her go away yet.
Yeah, I never actually thought of that she could have been injected with nanoprobes. I'm wondering if, like, that little scene at the beginning was foreshadowing, right? Where she says, "I would have made a much better Borg than you. Resistance is futile." Now I'm like, oh my goodness.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
That's great. Oh, I'd love to see that.
Ooh, oh, man.
But I gotta say, it was really nice to relate to Nerissa a little bit more this week.
Yes, yeah. Which is funny because I think she did her most horrendous things this week, but at the same time had those, and I'm sure the Romulans would not appreciate my use of this word, but those humanizing moments where you kind of connect with her a bit.
Right, yeah.
Well, Andrew Perrick says, "My favorite little nugget was the mention of Marta from Picard's Academy days, TNG Tapestry, as Captain Vandermeer's mentor. Great reference for fans without taking anything away from the episode for newcomers. Fan service done right." Yes, I really appreciated that callback to Marta Batanides from Tapestry. That was so cool. That was one moment where I was like, oh, and I rewound it just a minute, just like 10 seconds, because did he just say what I thought he said? So great stuff. I love that.
That's another thing that I missed this week. I need to rewatch. I have to admit again, this is the second week that I've only seen the episode once, but I will be watching it later today again.
Yeah, it's right near the end where they're talking about how Rios and Picard both knew Captain Vandermeer, and Picard says, "I kind of knew him. He was the first officer under an Academy classmate of mine." And Rios replies back, "Oh, Marta Batanides. And yeah, I know her," or something like that. So very cool.
Hoikur Gudmundsson, who was my guest last week, says, "So many things beautifully weaved together in this episode to set up for the two-part finale. I felt at times like I was watching TOS, TNG, Voyager, and the newness of Picard all together." I really like that comment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love this. This I kind of calls back to the earlier comment with the Star Trek-iness of this episode. I really felt that same thing here as well, for sure.
Yeah, I feel like we're getting that increasingly as this season runs its course.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, all the deep cuts.
Michael Merrick says, "Two takeaways I have from this episode. One, it was not the AIs of the ancient civilization that destroyed it. Their advanced AI somehow attracted a powerful outside force that destroyed them, similar to Zefram Cochrane attracting the attention of the Vulcans. Two, we have been thinking that Soji fulfills the prophecy of one girl who died and one who lived, but Janna also died. Because synths are always made in twos, Janna presumably has a surviving sister on the planet of the synths who might be the fulfillment of the prophecy."
Hmm.
Ooh, interesting. We're kind of getting that culmination of the lore they've established here, and I'm not sure how it's all going to shake out, but that's one thing that we've learned in Star Trek is prophecies and things like that don't always work exactly the way the characters on screen initially interpret them. So I think we're in for a few more twists and turns here for sure.
Yeah, that's a good point. What did you think about learning about Janna?
That was interesting. That's kind of the one part of the episode where I kind of think there's a little bit of small universe syndrome going on. Like, it's a pretty big coincidence that Rios has this close tie to the main storyline as well. It's not unforgivable. Star Trek's done it before, and this is not the worst example, but it was just enough to, you know, bump me a little bit and nudge me out of the episode for a second. But I'm along for the ride. I can keep up.
Yeah, it's a convenient coincidence, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, very much so.
Mark Keller, I don't know if anyone has mentioned this yet, but I thought it was great Raffi programmed the ship to refuse her alcohol. She did it on her own. It wasn't because people were judging her. From my experience, negative motivation usually backfires and the person will just withdraw from you instead of making a change. A nice update of the addiction storyline. So, Mark, thanks for saying that. And Dan, we've been talking a lot about this topic on Postcards, and it's something that I'm thinking about doing a special edition after the season finishes with this topic of Raffi and her struggles with addiction. What do you think about that thread?
I think it's been a really great addition to the series. I love seeing this character. I've known people who've gone through addiction. I've known friends and family who've been affected by it in their families and that sort of thing. So I feel like it's important. And the actress, Michelle Hurd herself, has said in interviews that, you know, part of the goal of the character is to show that, you know, you can still make a contribution. You can still make a difference. There's hope. There's things you can do. And in particular, this thing of her programming her replicator to lock herself out, I thought that was brilliant because, like, in this episode, she would have backslid in that moment, but instead it was just enough to give her that push to take on the issue with Rios and find a new goal that could propel her into something other than her destructive behavior, which is obviously something she really needs. I thought that was beautifully played out.
Yeah, well put, Dan.
JJ Becker says, I saw that as Raffi's way of having a conversation with the iteration of herself that existed in the moment that she had the resolve to stop drinking. If she had really wanted a drink, she could have gotten it any number of places on the ship, but she went to the one replicator console that she knew wouldn't give her the drink. She got what she was looking for, the moment to not take a drink. I love that. I had not thought of it in that way, and that's beautiful. I love especially how you say having a conversation with the iteration of herself that existed in the moment she decided to stop drinking. That's beautiful. And something that that's just another layer to the writing here that I hadn't considered that makes it all the more brilliant to me.
Yeah, I think so too. And it kind of exemplifies that being torn between, you know, yourself that wants to be healthy and wants to do right and wants to do good for yourself, and then that little demon that doesn't want you to. Mm-hmm. And she's got both of those going on. We all do in some way.
Absolutely.
And I like that she recognized and paid attention to that part of her that wants to be healthy and made a choice from that part of herself that then kept the other one from making another decision in a moment of weakness.
Yeah, it's like the little battle between the two parts played out there, and she gave the demon part of her just a little bit by asking, but the other part was able to emerge victorious because of the decisions she'd made earlier. That's so cool.
Yeah. Rob Chapman, what about seeing Seven become a Borg queen? Talk about totally friggin' awesome. Her eyes and that Borg collective voice sent chills down my spine. Also, seeing her face her biggest fear was incredibly powerful. I'm not a vengeful person, but I hope she gets to have her vengeance against Narissa and the Jat Vash for the murder of those poor XBs. First-time commenter. Rob, first of all, you're not a first-time commenter, so I see what you're trying to do there, and you're trying to get me to sing for you, and it's not gonna work. But nice try.
Brilliant.
And Dan, hey, so much for In Space No One Can Hear You Scream, huh?
Oh man, yeah, no, they flew in the face of that, but what an incredible scene. Yeah, Seven becoming the Borg Queen, yelling "We are Borg" with the voice of the collective. Oh man, that was incredible. I kind of wish more time was given over to some of the stuff on the cube. It felt a bit rushed to me, but it was some of the most incredibly powerful moments in this episode for sure.
I agree. And that was just a really chilling scene with all the XBs flying out.
Yeah, visually such a strike, maybe the most striking thing from this season, I think. And, you know, we know Seven of Nine's good at vengeance, so let's see her exact some of that on Nerissa for sure.
We certainly do now, yeah. Oh, Bejazel. You know, she had it coming, but it was difficult to watch.
Yes, definitely. It's always tough when a character you love is kind of on a path that you wouldn't necessarily choose for them, so.
Right.
Well, Nicholas Paul Collinson says, fun bit of trivia, while we don't know any of the octonary star systems, there is a known sexenary star system, six stars, within 80 light years of Earth. It's called Mizar and Elcor, and it looks like two stars to the naked eye, but it is, in fact, three close binary pairs in far orbits around each other. Oh, very cool. And I know Mizar... and I think maybe Elcor have both been mentioned in Star Trek as like throwaway star system mentions. So that's cool. And thank you for bringing the real life science down on that. That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, that's really cool, Nick. Reese Morgan says, an ancient relic that gives people visions of an upcoming apocalypse by machines, making some of the recipients go insane. The writers of the Mass Effect games must be gearing up for a lawsuit. I don't know what that means. Do you, Dan?
I've not played Mass Effect, but I've seen people commenting on this kind of all over the place. So I'm definitely not one to comment on this. But apparently there are some similarities to the storyline from those video games.
I feel like Brandy Jackala would know about that too, since she's a big gamer.
Yeah, we should have consulted her.
I should have. Yeah. Cool observation. I wish I knew more about it.
Me too. I have friends who play the game and love it, so I'm just not myself. Liam Smart says, now this was an enjoyable end, at least to me, a much better episode in terms of pacing. Character development can be done in faster paced episodes, and this episode shows it. That has been one of my problems with Picard. Some character development episodes have been a drag. Yeah, I get that. I get the pacing issue. For me, this one, I actually had an issue with the pacing in that it seemed a bit too quickly paced to me. But, that just goes to show there's definitely a variety of preferences and that sort of thing. I kind of like the slow burn, but, I definitely understand that it can feel like, okay, let's get on with it kind of thing.
Yeah, me too. Liam and I have talked about the pacing a lot, and I'm kind of back and forth about it. There were moments when I felt like it felt really good. There were moments when I felt like it was too slow. There were moments when I felt like it was too fast. I liked this episode. Nepenthe was definitely slower, but I really enjoyed kind of stewing in that for that episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the last two episodes are going to kind of seal the deal and make us have a better perspective on the whole season.
Yeah, I think so too, for sure.
JJ Becker back again says, speaking to Soji, Picard says, Data's capacity for expressing and processing emotion was limited. I suppose we had that in common. It seems to be something he has in common with the rest of the crew of La Serena too. Strangely, Soji seems to be the most in touch with what she's feeling. Just like Data, she's going to have to teach all these folks what it means to be human. Another great comment, JJ, and I hadn't thought about that she's the one that's really facing her feelings the most, right?
Yeah, definitely. Wow, I didn't think of that either. And yeah, this entire crew, Picard kind of said it in Nepenthe, they have a lot more emotional baggage. There's a lot more drama with them.
Yeah.
And they do have issues. You know, they don't have a Counselor Troi on board. This crew needs it, I think, way more than the crew of the Enterprise ever did. So, interesting thought. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, JJ always says a lot of really interesting things. They kind of have a Counselor Troi because Picard went and had his little reset button with the Troys, and so she got to counsel him and call him out on his BS a little bit and help him, tell him he needs to be Jean-Luc Picard, and now he can bring that advice back to the crew and help a little bit more. So Deanna's still kind of got her, she's still kind of affecting them, even though she's not physically present.
That's true, for sure, yeah. Janessa Quijada says, I got curious about Ibn Majid, and here it is. Ahmad ibn Majid was an Arabian navigator and cartographer born in the 1430s in Julfar, present-day Ras al Khaimah, United Arab Emirates, and I apologize for any butchering of pronunciations I have here. He was raised in a family famous for seafaring. At the age of 17, he was able to navigate ships. The exact date is not known, but Ibn Majid probably died in 1500. He became famous to the West as the navigator who helped Vasco da Gama find his way from Africa to India. Thank you so much for that. I have looked up Ibn Majid when the ship was first mentioned, but I did a very basic kind of, oh, he was a navigator, cool kind of thing. So this is great to kind of get this historical context. Thank you so much for looking that up.
Yeah, that's really cool. Thanks for the research, Janessa. Robert J. Geiger says, that final Picard speech was fantastic and should be enough to shut anyone up who says this isn't Star Trek. This season definitely seems to reflect that hopelessness a lot of us have been feeling as the world seems to fall apart around us, and Picard seems to have finally that glimmer of hope that can bring light to this world. Nice comment there, Robert. Yeah, with the people that are saying this isn't Star Trek or Discovery isn't Star Trek, I've said this before, you may not like it, it may not be the Star Trek that you're familiar with, it's not the Star Trek I'm familiar with in many ways, but it's Star Trek. I mean, it's Star Trek. It's just a fact.
Yeah. I mean, there's this belief that in order for something to be true Star Trek, it has to have like this checklist of qualities or something like that. And I mean, we can argue up and down if a certain piece of Star Trek has these qualities or not. But, you know, if you're going to compare like the episode, I don't know, the Drumhead to the episode The Sacrifice Masks. Of Angels, Masks, any episode compared to another episode, it's going to be completely different. And that's, I don't know, one of the brilliant things about Star Trek is it can be many different things. That said, the optimism, the hope, you know, Picard saying that fear is the true destroyer, that just does feel like the parts of Star Trek that I love coming through here. So I definitely agree with your assessment there, Robert. Thank you for that.
Yeah. And I like that we're seeing the struggle. Well, we're seeing the journey to things being better. And it's not easy. This is just reality. This is life. And what's the point in having this perfect utopian society if we don't work for it?
Yeah.
You know, and it goes up and down. It comes in waves. You know, historically.
And I feel like so much of Star Trek of the past, which I love, I love Star Trek, I always have. So much of it in the past has been, look at what those guys over there are doing. How wrong is that? We need to help them fix it and become better. And Picard, and in some ways Discovery, is a more self-reflective Star Trek, saying, well, maybe we're not perfect. Maybe we need to look within ourselves and figure out ways that we can be better. And I mean, Star Trek has done this in the past. The Drumhead is a perfect example of that kind of storytelling in Star Trek. But this is more of that, as opposed to the kind of more preachy type that it was in the past.
I couldn't have said it better myself. I think we're kind of being asked to do a lot more self-reflecting now with Star Trek and to kind of search inside instead of, like you said, looking at somebody else and demonizing them or saying they're the ones that were wrong and we have it all figured out.
Right, exactly.
We don't have it all figured out. I don't have it all figured out.
No, I think anyone who ever says that they do have it completely figured out is lying.
Yeah, don't trust those people.
No. Even if they're just lying to themselves, they're definitely lying.
I think that's probably the person that they're lying to first. So listeners, let's move on to your questions and concerns about the episode.
So Brando Calrissian says, and I love that name, by the way, I found this episode confusing and the pacing felt rushed. However, it was nice to get story threads tied together and more backstory. The cube scenes in this episode really didn't work for me, but it's a good setup. I mentioned this earlier. Some parts of this did feel rushed. There was a bit of like, let's get this all out of the way and on to the next thing a little bit. I liked what happened in the episode, I would have liked a little bit more of a deliberate pace myself. So, I think I agree with you there.
I don't agree, but that's okay. That's why we have these conversations. I totally respect what you think, Brando and Dan.
Oh, thank you. It is possible. Star Trek fans can disagree and still get along. Crazy.
I know. I really like it. I like that we have all this social media, which can totally be nasty and toxic. But I really like that we can disagree about stuff. And also, the thing that we all have in common is that we freaking love this franchise.
Exactly.
We love these characters. We love these shows. And I don't agree with you sometimes. And that's okay.
Absolutely.
Brian Diggs says, Picard is a lot of talk. Let's see how many more deaths he causes.
Oh, dear.
Oh, man. And Matthew Pittard says, why the hell didn't we see a Data assassination attempt episode during the 7-year run of TNG if they were so anti-Data and his kind? Brian brings up so many awesome points that I think a lot of us don't think about. This is just kind of the tip of the iceberg, but, you know, Brian talks a lot about how the Federation ideals in the past have seemed very white, European or American, and less diverse and more monocultural and things like that. And I think that's such a great thing to explore. I think the episodes are starting to do that a little bit more. And what do you think about not hearing anything about a Data assassination attempt?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, when you're adding something like this to the lore, there it is going to be, you know, something that you look at past Star Trek and say, well, does this fit? Does this, you know? And yeah, we didn't see a lot of that. There's kind of two things that come to mind that obviously were not intended when they were written, but with this new information, you can kind of apply a new filter to it and retcon some things in your mind. The Defector episode, which was brought up earlier this season, where Admiral Jarok says, I know a host of Romulan scientists who would love to be this close to you. And Data says, I do not find that concept particularly appealing. And he says, nor should you. And then, like, that you can totally retcon into, like, oh yeah, no, the Romulans do not like androids. And then there was another one that was brought up recently from the episode Data's Day, where there's the Vulcan ambassador aboard the ship who turns out to be a Romulan. And at one point in the story, she's very interested in Data, asking, like, stats about him and that kind of thing in this kind of weird, almost threatening way. And I think you can totally retcon that to fit into this. Obviously, again, not intended when it was written, but, you know, if you look, like Larry Nemechek always says, there's all these breadcrumbs that it's kind of up to us to connect and put together and, you know, to really mix metaphors. But, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunities for that.
I'm starting to find that to be kind of half of the fun.
Totally, yeah.
Because it makes us engage our imaginations a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not just necessarily about headcanon and creating your own thing, but it's like, you know, the franchise is really about all the fans. You know, we're the family and everything. And I think that it makes us kind of tighten the world a little bit more together between all of us.
Yeah. Yeah, that said, it does make sense that there'd be more of an assassination attempt or something along the way. So I get it.
That is true. Yeah, that's totally fair.
Well, Ian Bartholomew says, slight concern that we've hit the fast forward to the end stage towards the tail of that episode, though. I hope they don't leave too many threads dangling in their haste. This is a little bit of a worry at the back of my mind as well. You know, we only have 10 episodes, and the first 8 episodes of those 10 have just flown by. So yeah, I'm a little bit worried about that too. I hope it's not a rush job of wrapping everything up. I hope there is a little bit more deliberation and that sort of thing. So yeah, that's a concern I share a bit of for sure.
I don't, not this time.
Well, that's good. I mean, I certainly hope not, for sure.
Yeah, I'm kind of ready for the big 2 action-packed, crazy episodes with lots of twists and turns and surprises and fun and hoping we see Worf. And,
oh, that would be cool.
And Crusher, I don't know. I want a lot of cool stuff, but I'm kind of like, okay, let's go to the end. I'm ready for the sprint to the end because I want the bird's eye view of the entire season now.
Right.
it doesn't feel like we're at the same level of wrapping things up quickly that we were in season one of Discovery.
Yeah, that's true.
Which, to me, felt really rushed.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see why people would be concerned about that.
Yeah. I like a more deliberate pace, and it does, that's a good point. It feels like it's more of a deliberate setup and payoff than Discovery was. So, yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Brett Williams says, I have become accustomed to the setup episodes before the finale. Still love them, though. I really wish they had fleshed out Nerissa more like this one with Auntie. A big bad that believes themselves good is so much more compelling than a mustache-twirling evildoer. Never thought I'd root actively for a Borg cube. So, yeah, Brett, Ramda is Auntie to Narek and Nerissa. Fascinating. I love that. I have been so interested in Ramda since we first saw her.
Yeah, definitely. Her whole part in this, I think, was interesting. It was kind of, I felt a big surprise to find out her role and that sort of thing. I would have liked that to be kind of explored a little bit more than what we got here. As far as Nerissa goes, I do agree with you. I love when a villain is more fleshed out, more rounded. I felt like we got a bunch of that in this episode, but she was definitely still that mustache-twirling evildoer. A little bit more motivation here. I love that she absolutely feels that what she's doing is right and is going to save, as she said, trillions of lives. But at the same time, she does obviously love being horrible and killing people. Like, she is gleeful when she's executing the XBs and stuff. So there's a little bit of that aspect of her for sure. So Michael Brand says, okay, there are still things I do not like. The F-bombs. I mean, even today, you don't talk like that in professional contexts. It has to be used and embedded in a better way if you really think it has to be there. An admiral has to be professional and would not constantly talk like that, not even when they are mad, if they have any class. I think you come across a lot more powerful and exert way more authority if you know and use other words to make it very clear what you are about. It's easy to roll out swear words, but it requires intelligence, education, and self-confidence to achieve the other thing. Okay, fair enough. I get that the issues that people have with the language, I understand that. Personally, the two that Clancy have said are kind of my favorite. I know that's awful, but just the, like, I don't know, the reaction she elicits in Picard when she says them, I'm just, I don't know. Yeah. It's kind of gleeful to me. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
but,
no, me
but
too.
But I also get it. I do get the issues with it, for sure.
Yeah, I totally get the issues with it. I was raised that, you know, swear words are bad and all that kind of stuff. I personally curse. Mm-hmm. not on the show, but I do in real life.
Yeah, me too.
You're right, Michael. In a professional situation, I don't really talk like that, but, and the first time that Clancy did that, it was a bit of a shock. I think the second one, I think that the writers and the producers are just trolling all of us, all of the people that have an issue with it, and they're like, oh, you didn't like that? Well, we're going to do it again, and this time you're going to be conflicted because you're going to like her because she's doing what Picard asks, even reluctantly. She's still honoring the character that you love, but we're still going to make her cuss him out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost embarrassed to say how much I love that moment.
I loved the second one, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's one of those things, like, I'm a teacher, so obviously I don't use that language at work unless you're in the staff room.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, yeah, in a professional setting, it's not really something that's done. I think the times we have seen it, for the most part, outside of Clancy, have been, that made sense to me. You know, we've got this ragtag group, they're civilians, all this sort of stuff. And the two with Clancy, they're extraordinary circumstances, so I can kind of wave it away in my head. But I totally understand the issue with it as well.
Yeah, and I also think that they're kind of telling us that, you know, with all of the tone differences that we've experienced in this series so far, and how Picard is not who he was. People are dealing with their demons. We've been holding on to those moments where we find familiar things and we find safety. And we got a lot of that the last couple episodes. And I think this was just another way of pulling the rug out from under us again and saying, nope, 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 you're not quite there yet. We're not quite there. Everything is not safe. And Picard is not this wonderful, glorified hero that everybody loves yet.
Yeah, exactly. But I will say we've not seen Picard use that language. We've not seen any of his former crew use that language. It's, you know.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Those people don't tend to use that language. Clancy's just a little more rough around the edges.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Dan. The Troys are definitely who we, you know, they still hold true to their character after all these years. And Picard, too, he's just a little bit running around lost and figuring things out for himself again. Ricky Schnurstein says, with all due respect to the, and this is kind of a direct reply to you, Michael. He says, with all due respect to all those people that are not happy with the gore and swearing on the show, I'm just not bothered by it. There are other sci-fi shows that are 10 times as graphic as Picard, such as The Expanse, which makes Picard look like children programming. In my opinion, Star Trek is still pretty light when it comes to swearing and gore. Are the Jat Vash really the heroes in all of this, albeit the tactics they use are incredibly over-fanatical and quite extreme? Who was this ancient race that was wiped out and left the admonition? You know, reading your comment, Ricky, I guess that makes sense that the, you know, the gore and the swearing on this show is treated a little bit differently than other shows. The things that I've seen in The Expanse feels a lot more, I don't know, it feels a lot more realistically graphic, and it still feels like they're handling it in a little bit of a different way, even with Icheb's eyeball being pulled out of the socket. We get this kind of funky looking contraption, and it just looks, it's just a different way to deal with it. I'm not quite sure how to explain that.
Yeah, I feel like with the gore and the language in Picard, people are comparing it less to, you know, other television shows and more to Star Trek of the past. Like,
right.
Everyone's comparing it to TNG as opposed to, you know, there are shows like The Walking Dead out there and all this other stuff that,
oh my,
you know,
God,
are incredibly disturbing.
Oh, yeah.
Not to say that Picard should be on that level, but it is pretty tame compared to that. That's a good point.
Yeah. Ricky, also, we're kind of questioning the Jat Vash situation right now in this episode, right, Dan?
Yeah, because I don't know that they're the heroes in this. They certainly feel that they are the heroes in this. I think Picard's worldview is going to be the one that, quote unquote, wins out. But I don't know how it's all going to shake out at the end.
Right, and the question of this ancient race.
Mm-hmm. My vote is for the T'Khan Empire. I want to hear a name drop of them.
I read that in the comment thread also. Some people said the Iconians, which was a big cool theory in Star Trek Discovery Season 2 with the Red Angel.
Oh, that's right, too. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Part of me was wondering, all the fans were talking about the Iconians in Discovery Season 2. Maybe we should bring them in for Picard. I don't know. There are a lot of mysteries.
Fans seem to love these Iconians. Right? Let's bring them in. Awesome. Lori Damon Bowes says, so Auntie Romulan has seen the admonition, which took her over the edge, and then she was assimilated. If I recall correctly from various Voyager episodes, Seven described how all individual knowledge became common knowledge within the Borg collective. We saw that reinforced recently as both Hugh and Picard were aware of the Borg Queen's trajector room. Does that mean all the Borg and or XBs on the artifact were aware to any degree of the admonition? I think that's certainly possible, and why the Borg cube was cut off from the collective, I think, is kind of what they were hinting at.
Yeah, this is a really interesting part of the puzzle, I think. Why was the Borg ship cut off, and how did that Romulan ship, one of the very few crews of Romulans that have been assimilated, what does that have to do with it all?
Yeah, definitely. I like that question. Is all the Borg and the XBs on the artifact, are they aware of the admonition? That's a really good question. I'm not sure about that.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Paloma Bennett says, I thought it was interesting how Narissa and Narek's aunt is the same Romulan ex-Borg that Soji was interested in studying. I wonder if she is the key to saving the synth homeworld or destroying the world. Also, Narissa said that her aunt's madness was the reason why the Borg cube failed. So does that mean she has some psychic powers?
Hmm.
So much speculation and so few answers.
Yeah, I don't know. Those are all great questions.
Yeah. And that's the end of your questions and concerns for this episode. Let's get a little deeper now.
So Rebecca Skipper says, the scene where Soji asks Jurati if she is a real person almost brought tears to my eyes, along with the scene where Soji tries to give Picard some comfort and closure when she says, Data loved you. I think the series is still asking, what does it mean to be sentient, and when is it worth giving up your humanity? Yeah.
Rebecca, that is such a great comment.
Absolutely.
It's so great. And Rebecca also is blind. So she puts all these things together in her head, the imagery and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just so fascinated with the things that you come up with.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. What does it mean to be sentient, and when is it worth giving up your humanity? Oh, that's so good. Because we're seeing characters do that. We're seeing a lot of characters give up their humanity, right?
Yeah, definitely. And the question of sentience, that to me feels like such a Star Trek question as well.
Yeah.
You know, like in Measure of a Man, you know, they're asking, is Data sentient? And this is a question that still echoes and reverberates, you know, am I a person? When you see me, do you see a person? And Jurati doesn't know how to answer that. It's beautiful.
Dan, I've mentioned before on the episode some issues that I've had with this series, and I still have some little moments throughout the season so far that I'm just not totally happy with. But I gotta say, listening to comments like Rebecca's and other people in the Babel conference, this Star Trek is really some next level shit going on here.
Yeah, I agree.
Michael Bentley says, tears came to my eyes when Soji told him Data loved him. I'm an agnostic, re religion, but even so, greater love hath no man than this, that he lay down his life for a friend. Data reached peak humanity when he died. I mean, I'm like tearing up a little bit.
Yeah. I'm definitely feeling it. My brain, I have this very visual thing in my brain. So right when you were reading that comment, I pictured Data on the scimitar raising his phaser and whispering,
goodbye.
Just before man.
I know.
A moment that I hate in that film, but it's just resonating so much in this series.
Can you believe how much... And right now, even with reading this comment from Michael, like, you can feel Data's soul throughout this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that's brilliant to be able to do that.
Oh, man, it's incredible, for sure.
Wow.
Silke Fall says, after last week's episode and not being fully over being triggered badly by it, I was really hesitant whether or not I wanted to watch this week's episode. In the end, I did, in the middle of the day, and I'm glad I didn't let my fear keep me from it. For once again, I loved it. So far, every episode had at least one scene that stuck with me in particular. In Broken Pieces, it is the moment when Elnor wraps his arms around Seven and clings to her. That moment moved me deeply. It was like a child running into their parents' arms when they are scared. And then Seven's hesitation to hold him, my guess is because of what happened to Icheb and her being afraid to lose anyone else, and then putting her arms around him and telling him that he is safe now. What an incredible moment that was.
I know.
The reactions from all the characters, both of the characters in that scene, Elnor with his childlike innocence and just, you know, wanting to be safe, and Seven, her initial like, okay, and then committing to it. So beautiful.
I think probably the last time that somebody approached Seven in that familial type of way was Icheb. So that's a really great observation, Silke. That actually didn't occur to me right away. Mm-hmm. And Silke had some difficulties with Nepenthe, and I'm glad that you watched the episode. I'm glad that you still stuck through it. I also watched it in the middle of the day. And you know, yeah, the topic of suicide came up a little bit last week, and this week it was explored even further. And that's another thing, like addiction, that involves some very, very, very difficult feelings and thought processes. And it's making a lot of us really examine those concepts in our own lives.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And it's exploring those issues a lot more deeply than I would have expected. And I'm appreciating it, but it is definitely tough for people who are singularly impacted by those topics, I guess. Yeah,
it's really tough. I'm glad. I trust Star Trek to do that well, I guess. You know, I trust them to do it in a way that really makes us think about it, really makes us explore how we feel around it. And you know what? Yeah, it's triggering. It's going to be uncomfortable and it's going to be difficult. But I really feel that at the end of the day, Star Trek is going to handle these things with great care. And our final comment for this episode comes from Rhea Papagiorgio, my friend that I met at STLV last year, my Klingon warrior sister. This is a long one, but it's a really good one. She says, "One thing really stood out to me from this episode, which seems to have been woven throughout the entire series thus far, the power of lived experiences. Rios's reaction to Soji took him back to the event with his captain that has impacted his life every day since. The admonishment, when experienced through the artifact on Aya or via mind meld, just like Picard's experience in the Inner Light, is equivalent to have lived through that apocalypse. It is powerful enough to drive many to suicide, to drive the Jat Vash to genocide, to drive innocent Agnes to homicide, and to even cause the collapse of a Borg cube. Soji's memories and life experiences, when she began to doubt whether she actually lived them, suddenly became hollow and empty. Last week, one commenter on Postcards wrote about how Jurati's scene was a difficult trigger for her. A terrible life experience was brought to light by a scene in a TV show. And let us not forget our dear JL, whose wealth of lifetime experiences led him to disillusionment and isolation following the aftermath of the Mars attacks, but also gave him the wisdom to give one of the greatest Picard speeches ever to Rios. I hope the prophets are watching Picard. Maybe it will help them understand, quote, why do you exist here?
Wow.
I know. Well said, Rhea. Well said.
Oh, man.
That's also going to be the title of this episode, by the way. Why do you exist here? So I love that.
Oh, great.
That's a DS9 deep cut, by the way, y'all.
Yeah. That's one thing we need more of is Deep Space Nine deep cuts. We've had Quark mentioned a couple times, but, you know, I want more DS9.
Didn't you say on the live show on your network last weekend that when he started saying Deep Space, you like for a moment were hoping he was going to say Deep Space Nine?
I think that was Bruce.
Maybe it was Bruce Gibson. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that would be kind of cool. Wouldn't make a lot of sense, but it would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, what an incredibly insightful comment here. There's so much here, and man, you've put into words things that I hadn't even really thought of that well. So
I know.
Yeah.
Every week, Dan, it's like people are getting deeper and deeper, more introspective. It's like these beautiful essays. And I'm like, how do I sort through these things? How do I honor all these people that are like taking all this time to write such thoughtful things? Thank you, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's really great.
Well, I think you do a wonderful job.
Oh, stop.
There's so many great insights out there. And yeah, it's got to be tough to kind of winnow them down and get at the essence, but I think you do a great job.
It's so hard, but thank you.
And our listeners do a great job of thinking.
Yeah.
Like, I love this collection of insights. Like, these should all be published in a book after each season is done.
Oh, my God.
That would be incredible.
Oh, my God. I'm going to steal that idea. I'm going to do it.
Do it. Totally.
Dan, how did you think the fans responded to this episode?
I think it was generally a pretty good response. Most of the responses I've seen here and elsewhere have been generally positive. I think some of the issues that I had with the episode were issues that a lot of other people did as well, but that might be, what's the term when you, all the evidence you see just agrees with your thesis. No, I think there was generally a positive reaction. Definitely some people had some issues, but a lot of the comments I've been seeing is that this feels very old school Star Trek, or at least more so than Picard has up to this point.
Yeah, nice. Be sure to check out all of our Star Trek Picard coverage in the main feed for The Line and in the Trek FM master feed. You can catch full analysis on The Line main show with Chrissy, Justin, and Brandon. Our episode commentary show is Tracks on the Line with Mike and Max.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Star Trek Picard, and the best place to do that is the Babel Conference. That's our listeners group on Facebook, where we will collect your feedback for postcards. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM, or send us an email using the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Line.
Dan, it was so fun having you on today. You're such a great person to talk Trek with. Thank you for being here.
Oh, it was a pleasure. It was a lot of fun to be able to dive deep into these comments and get some of the great insights from the listeners.
Yeah. Tell everybody where they can find you online, although I'm sure a lot of people already know, and tell us all about your other projects.
Oh, for sure. Well, of course, here on Trek FM, you can find me and Bruce Gibson on Literary Treks, where we talk about Star Trek books and comics. We also have a new podcast that we've just started outside of the network called Positively Trek. Just search for Positively Trek. This is a fun new project that we've been doing that we're hoping will let people talk about Star Trek in a positive and fun way. We're not uncritical, but we also are not overly negative and bashing of Star Trek and the creators. So if you want a break from some of the vitriol that's out there, check that out. You can also find me on Twitter at Kertrats, that's K-E-R-T-R-A-T-S, and my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Kertrats Productions.
Yeah, and it's, you guys are like super respectful, and you're also just really fun, great guys.
Well, thanks. That's what we're going for. We're hoping respectful is one of our, you know, keywords that we want to really try and follow. So,
yeah. And you and Bruce and Brandy on the live show for Picard with Positively Trek is just so fun. And it's such a great time. I really enjoyed it last week.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. We do that on Fridays after new episodes of Picard. And that's on that Kertrats Productions YouTube channel. So yeah, check that out. We love to get the listeners chiming in with comments and stuff. So
yeah, and you had over 50 listeners, I think, at one point in the chat that I noticed, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. There's been just a little bit more engagement every week.
Yeah.
So yeah, the more the merrier. We love those comments.
Listeners, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CD Littlefield, and of course, lurking in the Babel Conference. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows going and even become an associate producer, visit patreon.com/trekfm for all the details. Thanks to our associate producer, Norman C. Lau. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line. Join us very soon for another episode of Postcards on the Line, right after Et in Arcadia Ego Part 1 drops. Hailing frequencies open, and don't forget to wash your hands. Exborg genocide.
Exborg genocide.
Exborg genocide.
Exborg genocide.
Fuck you, Narissa.